It's in the one-time bill.
Okay. The activity we have, we've been going back and forth, but we're going to start out with what we hope is a simpler bill, Senate File 997, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think it is a simple bill. Hopefully we can go quickly. I'll try to explain it very quickly. But I do have a couple of amendments, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to move those now?
Sure. If we could have the amendments, maybe both amendments distributed.
A-13
so we have them.
And the A-14 amendments.
Mr. Chair, should we adopt the division report?
I'm sorry. I forgot. I appreciate that.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'll move that.
Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, let's, if we can have the amendments.
I'll explain the amendments while they're being passed out, Mr. Chair. The first one, the A-13, they're both technical in nature. And the A-13 amendment simply makes sure that for the purposes of electric utility infrastructure costs, that the language authorizing those infrastructure improvement costs recovery are stated the right way and in the right place. The second amendment, Mr. Watson drafted, handed to me this morning, and I think it's just to make sure that the money that's assessed kind of ends up in the right places and in the right ways, and we say the right things about that. I don't know if Mr. Watson wants to expand on that. All right.
Senator Pappas?
I just moved the amendments.
Well, let's move one of the amendments.
Okay.
Pick one.
I'll move the A-13.
Okay. Senator Pappas moves the adoption of the A-13 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Senator Pappas. I'll move the A-14.
Senator Pappas moves adoption of the A-14 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion carries. Senator Dibble, this bill was heard in Senator Anderson's division. Is that?
That's correct, Mr. Okay. Chair. And previous to that, it was heard in Senator Pretner Solon's committee.
So we've had testimony in the division relative to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So if you want to just offer some discussion, and if there are questions for your witnesses, we can take questions from your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My witnesses are Bill Grant from the Isaac Walton League and Christy Briesman from the Department of Commerce. They're here to either offer testimony or answer questions. Very simply, this bill, even though it's kind of long, only has a few simple things that it attempts to achieve. It's a recognition that the energy we don't use is probably the cleanest and the cheapest energy that's available to us. And it helps us achieve those policy goals of cheap energy and clean energy, which are often in conflict with each other. We do have an existing conservation improvement program that the utilities each individually run that's overseen by the Department of Commerce and the Public Utilities Commission. That's fairly successful, but this bill tries to build on that. The key change, of course, is that we just simply have spending requirements now that we require of the utilities, and this bill seeks to actually present an energy savings goal of 1.5% of energy that's produced in the state. Each individual utility would be asked to achieve that 1.5% goal. But there are fairly significant provisions that allow for that goal to be varied down to 1% and even lower than 1% if for any reason, whether it's technological or, you know, based on their experience or their unique customer mix or some other tests that we allow for, those energy savings would be difficult to achieve or wouldn't be cost-effective or cost-efficient. And that's kind of the binding goal. Any energy savings that is achieved under existing conservation improvement programs or certainly strengthened in this bill's provision has to have a net benefit to both the utilities as well as the customers, all the rate payers, whether they're industrial rate payers, commercial rate payers, or residential rate payers. The bill also provides that the kind of savings that is accomplished goes well beyond the traditional conservation improvement programs that we have on the books. People are probably most familiar with the rebates that we have for energy-efficient appliances, those sorts of things. But it also allows for supply-side efficiencies to be counted towards those energy savings goals, and allows for some efficiencies in industrial processes as well to be counted towards those energy efficiency goals. The fiscal impacts, what propels this bill into the finance committees, can be found on page 12. In order to accomplish some of the objectives of the bill, some assessments are allowed by the Department of Commerce to the utilities to carry out provisions and activities. Actually, starting on page 11 with section 1E, or excuse me, 1D, then 1E and 1F, those are the chief assessments that are made to the utilities. The first one is so that the Department of Commerce can carry out technical activities, assistance, technical assistance, reporting activities, evaluation activities, and the like. The second one, subdivision 1E, allows Commerce to collect for the purpose of doing applied research, making grants to the utilities, making grants to others to propel innovative energy technologies out into the field so that we can really get those things out there and test them and start start seeing how those work in an applied setting. Yeah. And finally, section 1F allows for some assessments, some money to be generated in order to improve and update the benchmarking tools and the codes that we have around energy-efficient buildings. That's to support another goal in the bill, which is to achieve 1,000 commercial buildings as Energy Star certified and 100 commercial buildings as LEED, or you know, leadership in energy and environment and energy design by 2010. Very quickly, a few other provisions of the bill. We have low-income programs, and actually there is an ability to assess for the purpose of providing the low-income program services. Low-income programs, you know, serve low-income residential customers, don't necessarily contribute a whole lot to the overall goal of energy conservation, but make a huge difference in individuals' lives. As you can probably well imagine, folks who are living in housing that's substandard, that's drafty, they're probably paying way more than their budget can bear for their energy costs. And so the low takes the existing low-income programs, puts a little more meat on the bones, and makes sure that we go about that in a better manner. Finally, there is a provision to establish a pilot program for a concept known as decoupling, which removes the disincentive that utilities might have to be very aggressive in their energy conservation goals. It allows utilities to realize some of the cost savings that are achieved to customers by delinking some of the profit motive that they have in selling more energy. This is just a pilot program. The parameters are set up by the Public Utilities Commission. There's a sufficient opportunity. It's linked very strongly to these energy efficiency programs that are established, so no one is going to be paying any more money under any circumstance. It's only premised and triggered by cost savings and cost efficiencies. And, of course, as is true of all Public Utilities Commission processes, it's subject to review, approval, public hearings, and the like. And those are the major provisions. I don't think I'm missing any of the major ones. There's a little bit of interaction with municipalities as they enter into some energy savings contracts with utilities, some opportunity for the Department of Commerce to review those, make sure that they're achieving the best savings possible through their arrangements with their utilities. And we ask landlords to, as they already do now, but we expand a little bit of the language, asking them to make sure that rental properties, residential rental properties, are as energy efficient as possible with weather stripping and, you know, some of those modest improvements that they can make to those properties. And I think that covers the highlights of the bill, Mr. Chair. I'll stand for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Are there questions for Senator Dibble or his witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, I do have one question, and I didn't think of this when the bill was before division. The assessment that's made, the $800,000 and the $450,000, is that made across all the utilities that are regulated by the PUC or only those that come before the PUC for a rate change?
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, that's an assessment made to all utilities. It's probably something a little bit unique about this bill, even those that aren't subject to rate regulation. It's distributed across all utilities, including munis and co-ops.
Other questions? Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, just one further question on that. What's the mechanism and how is that spread across the municipalities and the co-ops who are not regulated? I think we have one co-op in the state that is regulated, and I believe none of the municipalities are regulated.
Right, yeah. That one is Dakota Electric. Ms. Brusman, I think this prorated by share, but Ms. Christy Brusman can.
Mr. Chair, Christy Brusman for the Department of Commerce. Senator, the way that the department assesses is based on a pro rata portion of all total sales, energy sales in the state. So each utility's pro rata share of the total bill then will go in that same order. So if they're 10% of total energy sales, they'll get 10% of that total bill.
Okay. Further questions for Senator Dibble? Amendments? Debate? Motions? Senator Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, if there's no further discussion, I'd like to move that Senate File 997 as amended be recommended to pass, referred to the floor of the Senate.
Okay, we have the Anderson motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank
Chair
you, Senator.
Members.
Next bill is Senator Cohen's bill, the one-time appropriation bill.
Okay, Madam Chair and members, let me just indicate how we're going to handle this just in terms of process. I want to make some general comments about this bill. Then we will have the spreadsheet and I think the bill is actually in the packets. The spreadsheet and the bill will be distributed to committee members and staff at the table. Then we'll have everything distributed to staff not present at the committee table. And then we will not recess, but we'll take a break for 2 minutes as the crowd of people descends upon
Kill
the committee
other.
Table. So,
Ms. Senator Cohen, and those of you who are interested in getting the spreadsheets, they will be on the end of each of these tables so that you don't hurt our staff people trying to pick them up. I'd advise you to try not to hurt each other either.
Okay, Madam Chair, just a couple of comments. This has been, I would suggest at best, a so-so process. Let me indicate where we started from. We have available in resources to the state legislature this year $1,013,000,000, and I believe $360,000 in one-time money available through the end of this year's biennium, at the end of this year, the fiscal year, June 30th of 2007. The Senate yesterday passed, and I forget what the file number is, and I'm sorry, Madam Chair, one other procedural note. This will be introduced as a committee bill today so that it doesn't have a number yet. We passed off the Senate floor, and I forget what the Senate file was, the number was, but it was a bill authored by Senator Pogemiller that places $629 million into the budget reserve. And members will recall the discussion on the floor, and certainly we've had discussion within this committee that an optimum number for the budget reserve has been the 5% as suggested by the Council of Economic Advisers. And the Senate made a decision with the dissent of, I think, I forget, 7, 8, 9 senators, to some of whom are here today, to put that money into the budget reserve. What that then did, of course, is to make the usage of one-time money quite difficult and limited what we can do in these efforts. Because the money that was then left within the Finance Committee based on that decision was, of course, to be divided with the Capital Investment Committee. And I know that several of us at the table serve on Senator Langseth's committee as well. And so Senator Langseth and I had a number of discussions throughout the session to determine what would be appropriated in his bill, what he would be doing with the debt capacity of $135 million, and to what extent that figure should be augmented by cash as conveyed from the Finance Committee. And so the decision was to give to Senator Langseth $137 million of that remaining balance. So that left a limited number of dollars to be placed in this bill. The second decision was whether or not to have these monies given to the divisions with a one-time target as well as an ongoing target. And this was a discussion between Senator Pogelmiller and myself, and a decision was reached that it might be easier to keep a handle on what was important for the state Senate by doing it as a single bill. And as division chairs and looking around the table, we have a number of the division chairs here, not all of them. I indicated that I would work with the division chairs in promulgation of this bill. Having said that, for committee members who are not division chairs, but I think who've been involved with some of these discussions as well, nobody's very happy about the process or the result. The intent has been to try to keep in mind at a more paramount level, but not totality, the interests and needs and importance of these appropriations to the individual divisions. Having said that, what I suggested, and I think people have maybe outside of the committee have had some confusion in their minds about how this process was going to work, I offered what I called a soft target to the finance divisions. That soft target assumed no money conveyed to the Capital Investment Committee. And obviously, as the division chairs knew, there'd be some money conveyed to the Capital Investment Committee. So at that time, the soft target, emphasized the word soft, conveyed to the divisions was reduced by a commensurate amount. And then I worked with the division chairs to take a look at what would fit. And I can't – and in some cases, you know, we set a more explicit target for division chairs. In other cases, it was a little bit looser. In putting this proposal together, I also tried to – because, again, money is limited – I also tried to get a sense of what might be happening in the other body. Now, this is not hard and fast nor religious, but attempted to try to get some sense of some of the programs possibly better supported in the other body and try to keep more proposals alive going through the conference committee process. The other thing, of course, that was necessitated was that if an optimum figure, and I'm going to mention one figure in particular, if an optimum figure was a higher figure, more often than not, that figure was reduced to maybe two-thirds, in some cases less, and in an effort to try to keep more of these important proposals alive as the process follows. And the example I'm going to use is the Clean Water Proposal, Senator Anderson, where you and I hoped at the start of the session that we thought maybe we'd have somewhere 75, 80 million.
Per year.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Anderson and Senator Frederickson hoped to have 80 million a year at the start of the session. As we started to work with soft targets, that figure looked more like 70, 75 million for the biennium. And the figure here is less. It's still significantly more than what the governor has proposed. Obviously, one of the things we hope to – that we thought might augment that would be the passage of Senator Pogelmiller's constitutional amendment that we discussed on Saturday. I'm not quite sure where that is right now. But certainly that's a very good illustration of the fact that what we have in here is far from perfect. But again, in the same way every division chairman got a target for putting together your budgets, I got a target for this bill. There's not a division chair who was satisfied with his or her target for the ongoing bill, and this chairman wasn't satisfied with my target either. So it's required a great deal of mix and matching. The last comment relative to the process, Madam Chair, is that my expectation is, and there have not been discussions, but I do need to reference where the House is in terms of the process. They have taken a lot of the ongoing money, and I believe, and I don't know in the course of their budget process if they will put a greater amount in the budget reserve at the front end. They have, I believe, an additional $30 million in the budget reserve. The governor has an additional $147 million. Again, we have an additional $629 million. So what clearly the other body is doing is taking the one-time money, What we are uncertain of is to what extent they are augmenting ongoing budgets with one-time money, which we have not done, with a couple of exceptions, or whether or how many of these one-time appropriations are going to be in their budget bills. My best expectation, and there has not been discussion up to this point between the House and the Senate relative to this, my best expectation, although I've lost a couple of votes so far this year, my best expectation would be that whatever we have in this bill will find its way to the conference committees, is my best guess. But again, there have not been discussions with the House relative to that. So, Madam Chair, those were the initial comments I wanted to make, and I don't know if people have any questions or comments about the process, the procedure, or anything, or if we should go to distribution of the rest of the material to the committee members and staff at the table, and then staff at the staff tables.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say in regard to the areas of my budget, I just tried to keep everything alive.
And Madam Chair, that's a good point. There was that intent, I think, on the part of some division chairs. And I certainly – I'm going to try to touch on the highlights of the bill. And, Madam Chair, maybe ask the chairman if they would like to comment on some of the details within their provisions. And certainly, it's no secret to anybody in the room, the divisions most significantly impacted by this bill would be, obviously, Senator Berglund's division, Senator Anderson, and Senator Tomasoni, who doesn't serve as a member of the committee.
Question, Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Collins, is the spreadsheet that we are going to receive, is it going to be different than this 5-6-2 document we have?
No. You have the bill, but no, we'd like to distribute the spreadsheet.
So we'll just recess the committee for a few minutes to get the spreadsheets safely in everyone's hands.
Emphasis on the word safely.
Meeting will be recessed.
I have one like this.
What do I do with my master?
Oh. Yeah, no, I don't have it anymore. I'm digging through everything I've got. I can't find it. So probably got picked up.
Oh, gotcha.
There's a break in the action.
Huh? Oh, I want that.